You're listening to Manx Radio, and I'm Judith Lay, welcoming you to the podcast of The Manx Sky at Night with Howard Parkin.
The Nation Station, Manx Radio.
Twinkle, twinkle, little star, how I wonder what you are.
We choose to go to the moon. We choose to go to the moon in this decade and do the other things. Not because they are easy, but because they are hard.
And that's the familiar music that usually tells us that Howard Parkin is here in the studio with this month's edition of The Manx Sky at Night. Well, Howard's not in the studio tonight. He's actually on the other side of the world. But that's not stopping us bringing you a programme using the miracle of modern technology. And so, Howard, Fastamai, good evening and welcome.
Yes, Fastamai, Judith. It's great to be here again. March is always a great time to do some stargazing because unlike the cold, frosty nights of winter when we really get these lovely, clear skies, we do get, it's a little bit warmer and it's still got lots of hours of darkness, so it's not as bad as other times of the year. The sun still goes down quite early, so we still get the opportunity from about 9 o'clock onwards every night to see something decent in the night sky. The March or the spring sky is often called the quiet sky, which after the magnificent displays of the sky we get in winter is a very accurate description, especially with Jupiter being so prominent at the moment in our winter sky. But the spring sky just might not have the dramatic features we get in the rest of the sky, but we still do have some wonderful things we can see. You can, of course, still see the winter stars visible in the western sky after sunset, so maybe give it the last opportunity to look at the stars of Orion and Taurus and Gemini and Cancer and all those others we can see in the winter sky before we turn our attention to those coming up in the east of the spring sky.
So, with Mars in its final week in the cathedral in Peel, what actual planets can we hope to see in our Manx skies, Howard?
The only planet we can see at the moment is the planet Jupiter, which is really quite unmistakable in the constellation of Gemini. And it is really very easy to see, very, very prominent, very dramatic, and by far the brightest object in that part of the sky. As I mentioned before, you've got so many bright stars in this part of the sky, but Jupiter really dominates them. And it's not far away from the two stars of Castor and Pollux, the two bright stars in the constellation of Gemini. And an interesting point about Jupiter is it's currently going backwards. At the beginning of the month, it'll be going backwards. It's been going in what we call retrograde motion for some time now. And this problem of stars going backwards in the sky caused the ancient astronomers all sorts of problems many, many years ago because they couldn't understand why the Earth, centre of the universe, with the planets going round it, would have planets going backwards. It wasn't until Copernicus proved that the Earth actually goes round the Sun that the problem of retrograde motion could be explored and explained, and that's why we see it. But it's interesting that Jupiter is currently going retrograde. It's actually slowing right down at the moment, hardly moving at all, and then what will happen from March the 11th onwards? It'll start going forwards in what we call positive motion. So order and establishment is once again being placed into the cosmos for us. Jupiter, of course, massive object, about 80 times the size of the Earth, very easy to see, very, very bright. And of course, if you look at it through a small telescope or binoculars, you'll see potentially four very tiny moons. These are the tiny moons that Galileo saw back in 1610 when he was looking for the sky through a telescope for the very first time. There is just about another planet visible in the sky, and that's the planet Venus. Venus is very, very bright, but unfortunately it is very close to the Sun. It went round the back of the Sun a few months ago now, beginning of January, and is now re-emerging in the evening sky above the horizon. But it's at a very low angle as well, so although it's quite a distance away from the Sun, it's at a very low angle and sets about 90 minutes after the Sun in late March. So you've got a chance of seeing it, but don't worry about it too much because it's got a great, what we call evening elongation in the next few months. It's going to be very, very close to the planet Jupiter in the middle of TT week. Officially on the 9th of June, the two will be just over the width of a full moon apart from each other. So that will be very, very dramatic and worth looking for. We've got a lunar eclipse on March the 3rd, but sadly that won't be seen from the Isle of Man. It's only going to be visible from people in Australia and New Zealand. But I always like to look at the moon when it's being eclipsed somewhere else in the world and just imagine where the Earth's shadow might be. For those in the Isle of Man, the Earth's shadow will be upper right of the moon. But the shadow, of course, we can't see because it's casting out into space and there's nothing within the distance between the Earth and the moon that will cast it into space. It does mean you won't see any satellites for a short period, which you can see quite commonly in the sky. So you won't see any in that part of the sky while the lunar eclipse is taking place in the late evening. It takes place on the evening from Manx perspective.
Right, from planets to stars. Weather permitting, Howard, what should we be looking for in the coming weeks?
If we look at the stars, Judith, you'll notice that the Milky Way is stretching almost directly from north to south at the moment. And it is really quite dramatic. If you get away from the full moon, which we don't want to have because we have the full moon at the beginning of the month when we have the eclipse, you won't be seeing the Milky Way till we get to mid-March onwards. But from about mid-March onwards, you might see the Milky Way from a dark location. And it's very easy to spot because Gemini and Taurus and all the others are passing, or the Milky Way is passing right through all of those. And then it stretches right across the sky and goes to the left of the plough and is visible going through the constellation of Cassiopeia. The stars, as I mentioned before, are a lot quieter at the moment, but when we do look at the sky and the Milky Way, it's interesting to note, and interesting for listeners to notice, that when we look at the sky, everything we see is within the Milky Way. Every single feature in the night sky, there are only four exceptions. There are four galaxies. There's the M31 Andromeda galaxy, the M33 Triangulum galaxy, and these aren't visible until the autumn anyway. But we've also got the two Magellanic clouds, and these are only visible in the southern hemisphere. So there's nothing to see in the way of other features in the night sky with a naked eye other than all the stars, and all objects we see are all entirely within the Milky Way galaxy. So as the stars of winter and Jupiter and everything else set slowly in the western sky, we have got the stars of spring coming forward now. We've got the stars of Leo and Virgo in particular, and Cancer, which is much fainter. But these birth signs, these constellations of the zodiac, these feature nicely in the sky as we stretch the sky across from the west to east. These will be rising in the eastern sky. And you'll notice there's far fewer in the way of bright stars in this part of the sky. And that's because, as I've often mentioned, the top 30 night sky stars, only three of them feature in the spring. The stars of Spica in Virgo, the star Regulus in Leo, and the star Arcturus in the constellation of Boertes. Regulus, incidentally, the bright star Regulus in Leo the Lion, which is one of the few stars that we can see to look a little bit like a lion, and that's going to have the moon pass right over the top of it on March the 6th. But sadly, we will only see what we call a passing occultation or a grazing occultation, because it's only going to be visible from places like Brazil, so you're not going to see it from the Isle of Man. The final feature, of course, in the sky is the plough. The plough is standing on its tail at this time of the year, and the pole star, of course, right in the middle. The two stars, Merak and Dubi, point to the pole star and give us our latitude on the Earth. We've got no meteors this month, so we'll leave that till next month when we'll talk about the Lyrid meteor shower. But basically, those are the stars for us. So we'll now have a musical break, and then we'll return and look at the world of space travel. Thank you.
You're listening to The Manx Sky at Night with Howard Parkin here on Manx Radio, and I think that might be a first for our music break on the programme. A bit of big band music. Moonglow from Benny Goodman and his orchestra. So, back to business. And what's the top story, Howard, in the world of space?
Yes, Judith, there's a lot going on in the field of space exploration, as it always seems to be every time we do these shows now. It's incredible. Keeping pace with it all is becoming somewhat difficult, I've got to say. It was very disappointing to learn only a couple of days ago that the Artemis 2 mission had once again been postponed. We were all getting quite excited about the fact that it was scheduled to be launched on the 6th of March, and NASA actually issued a statement to state that it would be launched on the 6th of March last Friday. But then after the wet dress rehearsal, where they actually filled and pressurized all the tanks of the SLS rocket, the giant SLS rocket, they then realized that there was a helium leak in one of the upper stages. And this can't, I don't think, be reached by the normal means of their access on the pad. So they're going to have to roll the whole vehicle back to the vehicle assembly building, that big, massive building where they have the crawl away, where they built the spacecraft, and then roll it out to the pad. They're going to have to take that all the way back, repair it, and then bring it back to the launch pad for testing once again, and then for orbiting. Obviously, it's a great shame, but you can understand they are absolutely risk-averse. They don't want any chances whatsoever. This is a huge, brand-new rocket, a brand-new manned spaceflight. The Orion spacecraft is brand-new. And I'm actually in touch with one of the crew, Victor Glover, one of the four crew, and he sends me regular updates, and he sent me an email this morning to tell me that that had been postponed again. NASA then issued a press release only a few hours later to confirm that was the case. This is the thing with science, with any form of science, with any experiment like this. It's frustrating for the media. I know there'll be all sorts of stuff about NASA delays moon launch again, but you've got to be very careful. You've got to make sure these things go when they're meant to go and don't take them any earlier and take risks. There's no rush. There's a launch window to the moon roughly every 28 days. So I'm guessing now the next available launch date will be early April, and we'll wait and see what happens. It will go. It's nearly ready to go now. It's just a question of the final testing. I know the crew have been released from quarantine, so they're back with their families, and they'll go through the whole process again in about a month's time. So in the meantime, we'll keep our eyes and ears open, and I'll keep you informed as to what's going on. This mission, just to remind listeners, this is the first mission back to the moon by humans since the 1972 Apollo 17 mission, and this mission is going to take the astronauts looping around the back of the moon. They're not going to go into lunar orbit or land on the moon. They're going to go round the back of the moon and go out as far into space as anyone has ever been, any human has ever been. They're going to really out beyond the moon and then come back to Earth. And then, subject to how that mission goes and everything else, they will then launch Artemis 3. At the moment, it's down to be launched no later than November 2027. But let's be realistic, it's probably going to be 2028. The problem with that mission, the big problem with this mission, the three mission, the one that's going to land on the moon, is that the lander, the landing spacecraft, which is being built by SpaceX, isn't ready. As quite a few listeners have probably seen, the launch of SpaceX are always quite dramatic. Sometimes they work, sometimes they don't. They are getting better and better, but until they get a completely successful test mission under the belt, and then indeed a test lander on the moon, I understand, only then will they launch the men and the women to the moon on the Artemis 3 mission. So watch this space. I'll be no doubt telling you all about this in the course of the next few months.
Well, there's scarcely a month passes that we don't have a SpaceX story. So, Howard, what's Mr. Musk doing this month?
SpaceX have just announced that originally Elon Musk was very keen to get to Mars. One of his stated goals was to launch the SpaceX organization. The main goal was to get to Mars to establish a colony on Mars. Elon Musk announced only a few weeks ago that they are moving their emphasis now away from going to Mars and going to the moon. And what they want to do is build a moon base on the moon and establish that and then go on to the Mars. That was always what NASA said they would do, incidentally. So now you've got SpaceX and NASA aligning together with the idea of using the moon as a base, and you can get to the moon, as I say, in just 3 days compared to 9 months to get to Mars. So interesting that Elon Musk has changed that emphasis. He had originally said he hoped to get a SpaceX vehicle to the planet Mars in the launch window that opens in 2026, literally in a few months' time. But it would appear he's backing away from that now, and he's putting all his efforts into going to the moon. Interestingly enough, NASA, who gave the contract for SpaceX to land on the moon with the Artemis 3 and the Artemis 4 missions, have now changed that contract and allowed Blue Origins. Blue Origins are the other company who launched private spacecraft. Blue Origins have also been given the go-ahead to try and devise a lunar lander. So maybe a little political intrigue here, or commercial pressure has been put onto SpaceX. I'm not really sure, but all I know is it's all fascinating and interesting stuff. And I'm watching it very keenly and looking to see what's going to go on.
Howard, we've not mentioned the International Space Station recently, so is there any news there?
We've got the new crew to the International Space Station, Crew 12. They launched on February the 11th and got to the space station on the 14th, on Valentine's Day. This was returning the space station to its normal crew number of 7. If you may recall, listeners may recall, that the original Crew 11 crew had to come back early due to a medical emergency. Again, there's all sorts of talk in the media about the fact that it was understaffed and its skeleton crew and all the rest. The International Space Station coped with only 2 and 3 crew members for a long, long time. It's only now that the capacity has been increased to 7. And this crew now have returned the crew level on the station back to the full level. So they got there, and they're there for 9 months now, which is getting quite typical now for crews to spend quite as long as that as they can. What was fascinating was you could actually see there's an aerial photograph taken at Cape Kennedy of the Artemis rocket on the launch pad, the SpaceX launch vehicle to the ISS on the launch pad, and a Falcon 9 launching an unmanned spacecraft into orbit from another launch pad. So we've gone full circle now from the age of back in the 60s when there was rocket launches quite often. Now we're going back to that, and this is commercial enterprise at its best. This is showing that the commercial exploitation of space is leaping ahead. And as I say, I keep looking at all the different news going on. It's difficult filtering out just what we can talk about. But as we've said before, we'll try and keep you posted. In other news, one of the big stories in the world of astronomy and space at the moment is the fact that SpaceX always in the news. SpaceX want to launch up to 1 million satellites to act as data centers around the Earth. All well and good, the technology is there, but what's this going to do from the astronomical perspective? This is going to mean there's got lots and lots of satellites in space. You can't see them because they're so small and they're very faint, but if you're taking proper astrophotographs or taking images or getting data from nebulas and clusters and galaxies and all that, the odds are the more and more satellites that are up there, they're going to interfere with your observations. And there's a huge outcry from the astronomical community to say enough's enough, and we need to start registering the number of satellites that can go up there and their orbits and everything else, because we're getting to the stage where it's starting to affect astronomy as a science. And this is huge because, of course, when you consider the huge, massive telescopes that exist around the world in the Canary Islands, in Hawaii, in Chile and places like that, it doesn't affect the amateurs quite as much, but it certainly affects the professional astronomers who are still trying to find out more and more about what's going on in the universe. When you consider the costs they've spent on the EELT, the imaginatively named European Extremely Large Telescope, that huge amount of money for that telescope, which is just about to come online later this year or next year, that work may be affected by this amount of satellites. So there needs to be some serious thought as to registration of launches and positions and everything else. And I've been asked as a member of the British Astronomical Association and the Royal Astronomical Association to actually submit my own thoughts, asking all the members to submit their own thoughts on this issue to try and have some clout in the international community to try and get something done to minimise this problem. I can't see it happening very easily because commercial pressures are always going to have the upper hand, and we'll have to wait and see. But again, it's a great story we can follow, and I look forward to doing so over the course of the next few weeks and months. Well, that's it for me now for this month. I hope you've enjoyed the show. I hope you've enjoyed the show Judith and I have put together, and I hope you'll listen to us again on the Sky at Night. From Howard, fast am I, and best wishes to everybody at home on the Isle of Man.
The Nation Station, Manx Radio.